Welcome to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Your host, Carl Nordgren, will teach you how to take an expansive view on what it means to be creative and entrepreneurial. Carl is an entrepreneur, novelist, and a lifelong student. For 20 years, he has been learning how to help folks grow their creative capacities. Now, here's Carl.
Hello and welcome. This is Carl Nordgren. This is Exploring Your Creative Genius. I'm so glad that you're listening. I hope you're having a groovy Sunday and that this week is going to be exactly the week that you need it to be. This is the show that believes nothing is as important as you growing your creative and your entrepreneurial and your adaptive and your resilient and your innovative qualities. I also believe that it's the most important preparation that we can make for our unknowable future. It's not just an unknown future, folks. It's an unknowable future. It's a future that's going to be filled with constant change, with more unexpected and fierce disruptions. It's going to be a future filled with extraordinary opportunity. The best way to prepare for that future, the best way to prepare for that unknowable future as you make your way through that unknowable future is by being your most creative and entrepreneurial self. I feel so strongly about that, folks, that I've written a new book. I talked a little bit about it in January. It's coming out in June, Common Ground for Us. A couple of ideas in this slim volume. One, it's filled with ideas, behaviors, concepts that will help us prepare to make our way in this unknowable future. There's also stuff in that book to help political and community leaders with new productive perspectives on policymaking, new productive perspectives on governance and leadership stories so that they can help us prepare for this unknowable future. In the book, I've taken, in the 24 and a half years that I've been committing my life to the purpose of helping us be our most creative and entrepreneurial selves, I've collected 100 concepts and behaviors about how to be creative. I've selected in my book 15 of them, and I'm going to sample some of those with you today. That's what today is going to be about, is not the messages for the political leadership, but what can we do? What can you and I do to prepare for this unknowable future? And I begin with being humble. Humility. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. That's not my line. I've borrowed that line. I've stolen that line from some source. It's not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less. Here's my observation, my line, and that is a humble person, a genuinely humble person, can be very proud of their accomplishments. And that's, to me, that's so attractive, right? When an authentically humble person accomplishes something that they just can't help but they just get so excited about it. They want to celebrate what they've done. That's consistent with their humility. Where it really relates to or has its most important message for us perhaps as we're looking to this unknowable future is that we don't know the most important things we're going to need to know. We don't know the most important things that we need to know as we enter this unknowable future. We have to set aside, if we are subject to this, and at times I have been, we need to set aside, I love this phrase because it sounds so good coming off the tongue, we have to set aside our epistemological arrogance. This idea that we know the most important things that need to be known, we need to set that aside so that we can be open to what is actually happening. If we're certain that we know, then we're not going to truly see what is going on before us. So being humble will be a very important behavior as we are entering this unknowable future. When I first began to collect content to share with folks, being generous was one of the very first ideas that showed itself, being generous. It was a very successful strategy for me during my entrepreneurial years. I learned that if I was generous with customers, they would be generous with the company. I learned that if I was generous with my employees, they would be generous with the company. And doesn't that sound like a sustainable, successful business place to be, is in a generous relationship with your customers and your employees? Again, though more relevant to preparing ourselves for the future, I urge you to be generous with new ideas, with new information. Make the best case for these new ideas before you set them aside. Make the best case for this new information. How would you explain these ideas to somebody else, right? How would you sell these ideas to somebody else? You're going to learn so much more about those ideas if you embrace them first. Again, if you try to make the very best case for them, you may finally then ultimately reject those ideas, but you're going to be much more confident that you in your making that decision, and you're going to learn. You're going to learn by making the best case for those ideas. Be generous with your friends and your associates. How am I suggesting you be generous with your friends and your associates? I'm suggesting that you be generous by sharing with them, sharing information, sharing opportunity. Especially, you want to share introductions. When you see and know of two people that really will benefit from knowing each other, be generous and take the time and make that introduction happen for them. Generosity in the human condition has got this wonderful reciprocal quality, right? What happens when somebody's generous with you? Aren't you highly inclined to be generous in return? Well, that leads to our third idea. We've talked about humility. We've talked about the importance of generosity. When you're generous with your friends and your associates and your colleagues, you are creating, here's the third idea, an extraordinarily useful asset here and now. It will become even more useful for you in the future, and that's your social capital network. Your social capital network is that network of friends and associates that you know, with whom you've worked, that you've lived, that you have vacation with, that you spend your time with. That's your network of friends and associates. And when you've been generous with them, since you've been generous with them, they are ready to reciprocate. They want to be generous in return. Think about what a wonderful asset that is to have people out in the world who are looking out after your interests because you've shown that you're looking out after theirs. And they're ready to share with you insights. They're ready to be scouts for you and share developments that maybe your perspective hasn't yet made available to you. So you want to have a robust social capital network. It's one of those places where one can make a really good argument for diversity, a really good argument, a practical, pragmatic, an altruistically pragmatic argument for diversity. The more diverse your social capital network is, the more there are people in that network who are unlike each other, the more likely you're going to see fresh perspectives, the more likely you're going to get different perspectives, and that's good for you. You don't want your network to be filled with people who are thinking the same way that you are. You want to have a network of folks who challenge you, who think differently than you do, who have fresh perspectives that you don't have. And then when it's a diverse network, there's an abundance of resources that will be available to you that would not otherwise be available to you. So there's our first three ideas, first three behaviors about how we prepare for our unknowable future. Come on back after the break and I'll have more for you.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Carl Nordgren. I mentioned in the first segment that I've got a new book coming out in June. I don't know that I mentioned its title, Common Ground for Us. It's a book that carries a subtitle, and that subtitle is Warning. This book makes folks optimistic. And again, that book will be out in June. And that book, again, has two purposes. One is to help you and I do what we can right now to begin to prepare to make our way successfully in an unknowable, unfathomable future, and to try to influence political and community leadership to take a fresh look at how they're talking to us about how they are serving us, and to take a fresh perspective on how they serve us. So I've introduced three behaviors: being generous, being humble, and developing a social capital network in the first segment. We're going to go on now with a few more. You want to, as this is important now, but this is going to become even more important in the future, you want to take multiple perspectives. Right? I'm a creative person. I've learned that taking one perspective on a problem, on an opportunity, even if I'm a creative person, even if that perspective has a creative quality to it, that ain't enough. Right? Linus Pauling, the gentleman that I quote frequently in my work, Linus Pauling, for those of you who don't immediately recognize his name, is the only individual to have won two Nobel Prizes all by himself individually. Others have won more than one, but they've won them as parts of teams. And he's the only individual to have won them in two different areas. He won a Nobel Prize, I think it was 1954, in chemistry. And then 8 years later, 62, he won a Nobel Prize, the Peace Prize. And Linus Pauling's quote is, "You want to have a good idea? Have lots of ideas." The way that applies to this work that we're doing is you want to have a really good creative perspective on what's going on around you. Take lots of perspectives. Have lots of perspectives. You're most likely to find a useful perspective when you take more of them. This calls for a bias for action, right? You're not very likely to be able to take multiple perspectives if you're just sitting in one spot, standing in one spot. You got to move, man. You got to move. You got to get out there. And the way that bias for action shows up for me is I was first told this quote as the following. If you want to understand something new, don't study it. First, get used to it. I liked that, but after I used that for a few months, I realized, no, there's a way that we can flip that, and it's even more useful. That is, if you want to understand something new, first get used to it. And then study it. Yes, we do want to study it, but first you want to get used to it. First you want to live with it. First you want to have a sensual experience with it. You want to have an emotional experience with it. And research shows that when we have those sensual, emotional, getting used to it experiences first, we're in effect building a scaffolding in our brain so that when we then do study it, the facts and the information that we study have a secure place for them to reside and where we can get the most out of them. So first, you want to get used to it. That's a bias for action. Then you want to study it. One of my granddaughters gave just a great picture of what we're talking about. She was about 4 or 5 years old at the time. I was so happy that I was there when this happened. At the age of 4 or 5, going to her Waldorf preschool, she was being shown how the old-fashioned apple peeler works, right, where you put an apple on the spindle, turn the crank, and this beautiful red ribbon comes spooling off. And so she did that, right? They put the apple on the spindle for her. She turned the crank, and that's exactly what happened. It's the next child's turn. And so the teacher tried to push my granddaughter gently, nudge her aside so that another child could take their turn. But Sylvie wouldn't move. My granddaughter Sylvie wouldn't move. Instead, she leaned forward, right? She was sort of arm's length distance from it when she was using it, when she was getting used to it. Right, by using it, and then she got used to it even more because when she was told it was time for her to leave, before she did, she leaned forward and got really close to it, and she saw how secure the base was, and she touched every piece of it, and she saw how the mechanics of it work by playing with it. Finally, the teacher was successful at moving Sylvie aside, and as the next child put their apple on the spindle and began to turn the crank, here's what Sylvie did. After having gotten used to it, she now studied it. She walked all the way around the table and watched from every angle as the other child turned the handle and created their own ribbon of peel and an apple ready to become cider. She studied it from every angle, and I'm sitting there in the corner going, yes, yes, yes. Talk about a natural creative genius, which, as you know, is a big part of the show. The name of the show is Exploring Your Creative Genius. Nobody taught her to do that. That was her natural instinct. That's our natural instinct, is to experience new opportunities the way Sylvie did. First getting used to it and then studying it. Power of both is a favorite topic of mine. And this future that we are working our way into, that where we are making our way as we make our way in this future, it's going to be offering us all kinds of paradoxes, all kinds of contradictions. This unknowable future is as you make your way. My urging to you is that you don't rush to compromise. Don't rush to compromise when you find contradictions or paradoxes as you're making your way. Instead, ask new questions to find a way to take new perspectives on what's happening here in front of you. I was taught this by some turtles, by very young snapping turtles. I'm going to guess they were no more than a day or two old, these snapping turtles were, when I saw them crossing the road. I was driving down a two-lane country road, sort of swampy, low forests on both sides. I looked up and I saw these two critters, unusual locomotion, crossing the road. I pulled my truck off to the side of the road. I ran down. I picked them up, about the size of a quarter, two-day-old baby snapping turtles. When I picked them up and put them in my palm, one of them retreated deep into its shell. The other one stuck its neck out as far as it could and opened its maw, its jaw, as if it were threatening me. I thought that was interesting. I put them in the front seat of my truck. I drove for another mile or so where I knew that there would be a path that would lead me deeper into the forest where I could get to a creek, a branch of New Hope Creek. And I thought, I will release them there. They'll be safe when I release them at the creek. I walked to the creek. I knelt down at the side of the creek. I put them both in the water, and folks, in an instant, they were both gone. In the blink of an eye, they were both gone. One of them burrowed into the deep, into the soft, muddy bottom. One of them burrowed into the soft, muddy bottom, and the other one darted into the deep, dark water of the creek, right? So opposite behaviors, very opposite behaviors, and I was stunned by that in the moment. I was just stunned by that, regardless of what the strategy of the predator was, one of them would have survived. These two apparently contradictory behaviors were both necessary. And so I realized that the question that one would ask could reconcile these contrary behaviors. If I asked what a turtle should do, I had these contradictions. If I asked that within a clutch of turtles, a newly hatched clutch of turtles, what behaviors should be present so the greatest number of them would survive? Well, then these opposite behaviors get reconciled. They're both necessary. So that's what you want to do. You want to ask new questions. You want to try to take new perspectives when you find these contradictions and see if you can unleash the power of both. And folks, we've got one more segment coming up. Please join us after the break.
You're listening to Exploring Your Creative Genius with Carl Nordgren. Welcome back to Exploring Your Creative Genius. Here's your host, Carl Nordgren.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming back. This is Carl Nordgren. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill, WCHL, the best radio station in the state of North Carolina. I think it's 6 years running. In fact, I'm looking out through the window out of the studio, out into the lobby of the radio station, and I see a trophy case just filled with trophies, well-deserved trophies, each and every one of them. We're talking today about the behaviors, the creative behaviors that are really helpful for us as we prepare for our unknowable futures. And it is an unknowable future. There will be constant unpredictable changes. There will be more fierce disruptions like the one that we went through with COVID, although they won't be of that sort. And maybe it'll be a disruption because all of a sudden there will be a big advancement in AI. And there will be a whole lot of people losing their jobs. Maybe it's that kind of a disruption. There's also going to be unimaginable opportunity, big technology breakthroughs in all the important fields, in green tech, in clean energy, in transportation. Going to be these big breakthroughs that are going to provide all sorts of opportunities for us. The best way to prepare for any of it and all of that is to be your most creative and your most entrepreneurial self. I've been sharing some specific behaviors that will help you prepare to make your way in the unknowable future. I think we've got a couple more here before we run out of time this Sunday. The next is story. When I talked about generosity in the first segment, I said it was one of the very first concepts that I discovered as I was looking to pull together content to teach. I was looking initially in my entrepreneurial career, my entrepreneurial experiences to find that content. And the first two that I found, one was generosity. It served me so well in the ways, and my companies so well in the ways that I've already shared with you. The other was story. I realized that whenever our startup could control the marketplace narrative, we were so much closer to success than we would be if we weren't controlling the marketplace narrative. I came across about a year or so ago and a thought, an insight. I say a quote, but I won't be quoting him exactly, but it's his very accurate version of what he had to say. Andrew Fletcher. Andrew Fletcher in the late 1700s was a Scottish writer, politician. They identify him as a patriot, do they, with Andrew Fletcher? And he said something very much like the following. If I could write the ballads for a nation, I wouldn't care who would write the laws. If I could write the ballads for a nation, I wouldn't care who would write the laws. And what he understood was that those laws would be written in a fashion that would be consistent with what the ballads were singing to us, were singing to who we were. Of course, ballads are narratives set to music, and so I take his quote, I steal his quote and use it the way I would like to use it, and that is that when you can control the narrative, when you can control the story, when you offer the story for people that they want to embrace, when they offer a story for people that they see themselves in, and that is their story, of course the lawmaking that they're going to engage in is going to be consistent with that story of themselves. And so here's, you know, I talked about the fact that I was going to share ideas today for us as individuals. Here's one that really has importance for political leadership, right? When politicians and community leaders can serve us by telling the story that serves us, by telling the story that's true for us, that tells a story about how we are all born with remarkable creative qualities, then the policy, the law that we're going to make in the wake of that narrative is going to be consistent with that narrative. I found this to be true when I helped start Cellular One of the Triangle back in 1985. We were so successful, we wound up with licenses for about 15 other markets, mostly in the Southeast, but in other parts of the nation. To remind you, Cellular started as a local market company. And we resisted the temptation of saying, okay, here's what worked in the Triangle. Now you all do exactly the same thing in your markets. No, instead we said, here's our story. Here's the underlying narrative of why we were successful. Now, own that narrative, be true to that narrative, and then turn that narrative into the policies and the programs that are right for your market. And while just like we had something like a 65% market share in Raleigh, we were in the mid-60 market share in all of our other markets as well. Right? We controlled the narrative, and folks made policies consistent with that narrative that were also true and appropriate for their local market conditions. Folks, I've made this offer before. I'll make it again. I would love to do a free creativity workshop for you, for your book club, for your church group, for your social group, any nonprofit, anything that is not a money-making organization, a neighborhood group. I would love to do a free creativity workshop for you. If we bring 6 or 7 people together, that'll be great. If we bring 10 people together, that'd be outstanding. Anything more than 10, we'll have a party. So please, you'll find my email address on the posting of this show on the website on Wednesday. It's carlnordegren14@gmail.com. Please reach out to me if you'd like to have a free creativity workshop. And I hope you have a wonderful week.
This has been Exploring Your Creative Genius on 97.9 The Hill. You can listen to other episodes on chapelboro.com.